What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast at epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, Blueberry, and now on Stitcher Radio. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vosk, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, all about taking the ancient and bringing it to us today. It's a mix of chant and rock and roll. It's walking in the sandals of Christ and in the shoes of the homeless, the cancer victim and the prisoner. Armedoxy has arrived, and we're glad you're joining us today. This is part of the expanding vision of the Inner Shoes mission, and if you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. I'm surprising myself with that energy level, too. I don't know. I'm not up to it, but we're going to make it work today. Anyway, glad you're with us today. It is a beautiful Thursday morning here at Epostle East. We are broadcasting from Pasadena, California, and we've got some new equipment that we're testing out, so I'd love to hear from you. What does it sound like? I won't go into the details, but it's some fun new little equipment. Not major, but actually a little bit minor. It's kind of like a smaller little footprint, making it easier for us to do some remote broadcasting. So I'd like to hear from you, the audiophiles, to find out if you can tell any difference, or if you can't, and if you can't, so what? We are together today. Hey, we've got a wide variety of things that I want to share with you today. I'm going to be doing some traveling this weekend, and want to share with you what I'm doing. I think it's going to interest a lot of you. Of course, we're going to be talking about the Philippines, what's going out there. Got a beautiful song that I want to share with you today. So let me just jump right into it. About a year ago, year and a half ago, the Archbishop of this diocese, where I serve here in the Western Diocese, approached me and said, would you take on the task of, you know, leading the 100th anniversary commemoration of the Armenian Genocide? The Armenian Genocide back in 1915, the first genocide of the 20th century. And those of you who have been following along my ministry, following along Next Step in particular, actually Next Step in itself, In His Shoes, was born out of the reaction to the genocide. Think about it for a moment. What is the most awful and atrocious manner of inhumanity? Wouldn't that be genocide? Wouldn't that be the idea of removing one group of people, one species of people, one race of people, their culture, their gene pool from this earth? And genocide, of course, coined after World War II, applies first and foremost to the Armenians, who in 1915 were the object of genocide, when the Turkish government decided that, you know, every Armenian would be wiped off of the planet, and one of them actually said, there will be one Armenian, and that Armenian will be sitting in a museum. And we could look at him and say, oh yeah, at one point there was Armenians in this world. And it's not only just wiping out the people, think also in terms of wiping out that culture. It was right after World War II. I can't remember if it was 47, 48, maybe. Here it is. For 1948, they came out with a convention on the prevention and punishment of crimes of genocide. And in there, there were key provisions. Basically, what is genocide? It includes... let me just read it. The convention defines genocide as an act committed with the idea of destroying, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. This includes such acts as killing members of the group, causing serious bodily and mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting conditions calculated to physically destroy the group, the whole group, or even part of the group, and forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And certainly all these conditions were met back in 1915 when the Turkish government had orchestrated a plan of systematic annihilation of the Armenian people. And hence the word genocide is attributed to the Armenians. And so Armenians, and in fact being such a small little ethnic group in the entire world population, I mean, count them all, there's maybe like about 8 to 10 million they estimate. Many of them who have been lost in different ways, emotionally, psychologically, even physically, from the Armenian community. I mean, it's a very, very, very small number. But because of their smallness, because of that small population, there's issues of insecurity, right? Any small person, you go out on the playground, and what do you see? I mean, you know, even among kids, right? It's always the weaker one that gets the runt of the litter, let's say. I don't know. I hate using it, that expression, but it basically, the smaller you are, there's more likelihood that you're going to get picked on. What happens to you? All of a sudden, you start developing different kinds of, not only phobias, but different kinds of psychological insecurities, right? And think about it for a moment, right? I hate to say it, the runt of the litter, the kid on the playground who gets picked on all the time. It's the small guy, right? And certainly within ethnic groups too, you develop these kind of insecurities. And it's interesting because the definition of genocide is not just picking up guns and picking up swords and killing off people, you know, annihilating people, but also inflicting that psychological harm so that generations later there's going to be issues. One of the most moving episodes in my life, I could say, was when I walked into this camp in Rwanda back in 2006. And it was a camp that was dedicated to orphans and widows of the genocide. And it was the first time, I think we were there in total 2 weeks in Rwanda, and I think in 3 or 4 days I had walked throughout Rwanda, visiting different places and on the streets of Rwanda, and something was really interesting. There was nobody with gray hair. Well, obviously, I had arrived in Rwanda like 10 years after the genocide, so everybody who was old at the time of the genocide was killed, annihilated. So right now, I was seeing the people that were basically babies that were left there, and now they had grown up a generation, and they were in their 20s, and in their teens, in their 20s, maybe in their 30s, and seldom would you see people with gray hair. Until I got to this one camp, and in that camp, it was a small gathering of women and orphans of the genocide, and the women had gray hair. They were older women. And it was interesting for me. I asked, well, what's the story here? Why are these older women, why were these spared? And slowly talking and everything and discussing with them, I found out that in this one camp, all of these women were sitting there. They were all, they all had HIV/AIDS. And think about this for a moment, and this wasn't easy to find out. I found out after much talking and discussion with many of the leadership over there, what was the strategy behind this? Well, these women were left to live, because figuring that if they were infected with HIV/AIDS, they would infect the subsequent generations. And so you don't have to really pick up swords. It could be a bloodless genocide. Basically, everybody would have AIDS, and they'd die off. And there's a strategy in this, right? They've got a strategy. And it's not just to kill the people right there, it's to kill subsequent generations. And certainly, as an Armenian, I know I go through this all the time. I look at the psychological death that we as Armenians are dealing with every single day, psychologically. The other day, it was interesting, somebody, what is the guy's name, Hamparyan, I think, back in... on the East Coast, he's in charge of the Armenian National Committee, and you know they are a lobbyist group. They're lobbyists for the Armenian question, the Armenian cause. Now, interestingly enough, he had put up a post about the Haytad. Now, Tad means case, like a legal case. Okay, so the Tad, you go to Tad, you go to you have your case taken care of. You're seeking justice. It makes sense within the legal parameters to talk about a Tad, to talk about that case. It sometimes gets translated into the Armenian cause, the Armenian question, and certainly within the confines of 1915 and the genocide and Turkey and retribution and recognition, this has a unique set of meanings. It's not just the word. But I was focusing in on that word itself, the Armenian cause. And it occurred to me because I'm working right now in Glendale, where we have basically a genocide that's taking place without any need of bloodshed. It's the genocide that's being caused by drugs, by a lifestyle that is equated with the more you have, the better you are. And we're seeing so many Armenians fall into that whole trap because it's very important for them to have the latest model car. So it's no problem for them to take the food off of their family's table and make $700-$800 a month payments to support this car, to show the affluence, or to have these $100,000-$200,000 weddings just to show off that you could do it better than the last wedding. And I've been to many of these places. In fact, just recently our archbishop made a statement, and he said that, hey, we need to address the issue of in lieu of flowers. We go to funerals where there's $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 worth of flowers that are basically literally going into the grave. It's money just being buried. And when you think about that money that could be used to educate children, that money that could be used, well, in my case, I'm talking about foster parenting these children, to set up homes, group homes. There's so many opportunities, and it just seems like a shame. At the very least, it seems like a misdirected use of money, of resources. There's better ways of spending this. And that's, yeah, okay, it's a value judgment. Okay, yeah, somebody say, well, what is it to you? I'm driving around in a car that I enjoy and everything, but at what cost? At what cost? At a cost of loss of identity, of loss of person, of loss of values. And at that point, you get into the genocide discussion. All this to say that when this all started, when the Archbishop approached me and asked me, would you take charge of this 100th anniversary commemoration, I did with the provision that, okay, we will do it, but instead of focusing on the event that took place 100 years ago as this negative reality, and certainly there are enough Armenian political parties that are lobbying for recognition and retribution, how about we as a church, as Christ's body, take the emphasis and focus on the aftermath of crucifixion, basically resurrection. Are the Armenian people a resurrected people? And this is arguable as well. I mean, there's people within the community that will argue it. For me, it's a no-brainer. I'm living right now. I am. There, to me, there is a no question about genocide. It did happen. It was a crucifixion, and to me, there is a no question that there is a resurrection. There are people living today. There are people that are proclaiming to be Armenian, and the Armenian culture is not only preserved as a museum piece, but it is thriving. I got to be honest with you. I sometimes listen to, I'm an old schooler. I love Armenian music from the past, and I listen to some of the new Armenian music, and I can't take it. I look at some of the Armenian culture and I go, what is this? But you know what? It is. It's the expression of Armenians today. So, like it or not, it means that the people are living. It's a very valid expression of a group of people that are living, who are today. So, in many ways, that resurrection has to be the focus of what we're doing. So, with that in mind, we put together a few programs for the 100th anniversary. And these programs are really more to focus on the 100-year journey. And we're calling it the 100-year journey because it has been 100 years that we've been on a journey. And it's not only, this is very interesting, the way we're taking it is not only to resurrection, but what happens after resurrection? There is ascension. Basically, standing up. Standing up, okay? Jesus resurrected, came back to life, but then he took a motion. He stood up and he ascended. Now we as Armenians, resurrected, we came back to life. Can we now stand up? Can we ascend to our next step? To where we need to be. Okay, with that being said, we put together a few different programs, and I'm very, very excited with an art project that we're doing. To you, Next Step listeners, very familiar name, Gregory Baylarian. He's also been a guest here on Next Step. We started collaborating together. We're talking also with Gor Mkhitaryan, putting together an art project that will have significance not only for the Armenians, but actually within America. Because the story of the 100-year journey, is a group of people that are ascending within the diaspora here in America, specifically only because I'm a member of the Western Diocese and my functioning is here in America. I'm gearing it for that market. We want to make a statement that here are a group of people that have not only resurrected but have ascended, have reached a position where they can become the shaker and movers. Despite the small number, they are shaking and moving society in a very unique way. You look at what Armenians have contributed to society, to the world. My friend Stepan Partamian has put together a book that says Armenians and World. That's great. But what's the uniqueness of it? That they come in as genocide survivors. So they come in with the baggage of genocide and are able to put it to one side and then move forward. That in itself is a uniqueness. It's a lot of times that people will get caught up in the negativity. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes when we talk about our angels and so on, what's going on in the Philippines. But let me leave it at right there, right now, and then I'll come back after the song of the day and share with you where we're going with all of this, what I'm going to be doing. But for right now, song of the day, you know, the situation in the Philippines, the typhoon, it's reminiscent for me of what happened 25 years ago, right about this time, in Armenia. Total massive destruction, chaos, after a massive earthquake that claimed lives. Nobody really knows what the count was because of the primitive systems that were in place during the Soviet era. But 25 to 50,000, I mean, what a wide, diverse number that you have over there. But it doesn't matter. It was a mass destruction. We call it as such, chaotic. And, of course, that's what's happening in the Philippines right now. And it gives us an opportunity to really look and wonder what we can do. How do we walk in their shoes and bring some relief? I picked out a song from the Help Haiti Now album a few years ago when Haiti was hit by hurricanes. There's earthquakes, there's hurricanes, there's all kinds of natural disasters hitting this planet, and it's up to us to help. This is Beyonce singing Halo.
Those walls I built, well, baby, they tumbling down. They didn't even put up a fight. They didn't even make a sound. I found a way to let you in, but I never really had a doubt. Standing in the light of your halo, I got my angel now. It's like I've been awakened. Every rule I had you breaking. It's the risk that I'm taking. I ain't never gonna shut you out, 'cause everywhere we look now, I'm surrounded by your embrace. Haiti, I can see your halo. You know you're my saving grace. You're everything we need and more. It's written all over your face. Haiti, we can see your halo. I pray it won't fade away. Halo, I can see. can see your halo. You hit me like a ray of sun, burning through my darkest night. You're the only one that I want. I'm addicted to your light. I swore I'd never fall again, but this don't even feel like falling. Gravity came again to pull me back to the ground again. It's like I've been awakened. Every rule I had you break again. The risk that I'm taking, I'm never gonna shut you out. Everywhere we're looking now, I'm surrounded by your embrace. Haiti, we can see your halo. You know you're my saving grace. You're everything we need and more. It's written all over your face. Haiti, we can see your halo. I pray it won't fade away. Your halo, I can see your halo. I can see your halo. I can see your halo. Your halo, I can feel your halo. I can see your halo. I can see your halo. Everywhere we're looking now, surrounded by your embrace. Haiti, we can see a halo. You know you're my saving grace. You're everything we need and more. It's written all over your face. Haiti, we can feel your halo. I pray it won't fade away.
That is Beyonce doing Halo, and it is off of the Help Haiti Now album. Came out a few years ago. I can't remember when. I do have a copy of it, so I played it for you. But what I'd like to do is actually put a link to that, too, because it's so easy to forget that, you know, there are other disasters that have happened, and they don't just get cleared away because for a couple weeks we've all decided to help. Certainly with the situation in the Philippines, our attention is over there. Please make your donations. In Issues usually comes out with a list of people. In this case, we haven't. You know, what's really important about these situations is when you give, making sure that the organization that you give to has resources on the ground already in place, so you're not building a new infrastructure. And so it's very important that you do a little bit of research. I'm not saying go get obsessed with it, because obviously money will get there. But in many times you want to give it to an organization that already is in place, already is doing some work over there, whether it's a World Vision, the Red Cross. These are people that already have people right on the scene and helping out the situation. So please be generous in your giving. And like I said, I'll make sure that there's a link on the Haiti to the Haiti website as well, because you know you can't believe that just because for a few weeks, few months people gave, that everything's okay. In fact, on the Haiti website, it's called the Hope for Haiti. It says connect, heal, and empower. And I really like that. It's talking about the aftermath. It's talking about the 100-year journey, basically. It's not looking at the negativity, but it's looking at the positive. And, well, let's take off with this. I was listening to a very, very interesting report that came from the BBC. It might have been NPR. I believe it was the BBC a few days ago. And they were interviewing a guy in the Philippines who had seen complete, total disaster, destruction of his home, his business, his family, his loved ones. You've seen the pictures that are coming out of the Philippines. And this was a man whose job, well, he's a tech support. You know when you call that 800 number and you hear somebody with an accent? And you say, wait a minute, is this person in Kansas? No, he's not. He's not in Oklahoma. He's not in the heartland. No, he's maybe in India. Maybe he's in the Philippines. And this person that they were interviewing was in the Philippines. That's what his job was, tech support. And for 2 days, because of the typhoon, he was out of a job as well because he couldn't do his work. He couldn't answer phones. So they were interviewing him. And here's an interesting thing. The commentator asked, says, how does it feel? People are calling you and complaining about their computer not booting up. They're calling you and complaining to you that a certain program is not working when your entire life is not working. When you've lost everything and you have these irate customers calling you up and saying, what kind of thing have you sold me and everything? And basically, you're the tech support guy out in the Philippines. Your job is just to answer the phones and give some answers, right? But how does it feel when you are the guy who's seen mass destruction? You've seen the crumbling of your whole society, not just an operating system or a small little program. You've seen the destruction of your society. And you're standing there and you're trying to bring some semblance of order, and all of a sudden somebody's calling you and he's just upset to no end because, you know, he put a thumb drive into the USB port and it wasn't recognized. What kind of product have you sold me? My thumb drive is not being recognized. And so they interviewed this guy, and I was just surprised by, and maybe he was still in shock, but I was just surprised at his composure. I was surprised at what a mature and meaningful answer he gave, something that for me was very, very welcome in my life. He just said, this is my job. He says, this is my job. On top of everything else, I do have a job. I need a way of supporting myself as well as my family. And this is what they are paying me for, is to tell that person how to make that thumb drive work, how to make that computer work. And so I'm going to do it. And it's interesting because I think a lot of times we get so spoiled with life that we feel like life owes us something. And in this case, it was just the opposite, wasn't it? It was like, no, I owe something because I'm being paid and I'm an honest person and this is what my job is. So thank God that I do have this job. At least I have that small little bit. And this all plays into some of the bigger issues that we look at. You know, last week was the Feast of the Angels in the church. If you didn't get a chance to listen to my sermon, I'll put a link on today's show notes because it was an interesting flow of ideas that just sort of came out during the sermon. And first of all, let's back up and talk about angels. Angels, of course, are messengers. And it occurred to me that, you know, we all have these messengers with us all the time. And certainly these new cell phones, smartphones, they are messengers. Okay, they're not only voices of our loved ones and our contacts talking to us, but they are texts that come from us. They are the emails that they send to us. And they are basically communicators, messengers that give us a message. Now, you have an option, don't you, with these messengers? You can turn off the cell phone completely. You can turn off certain functions. You could turn off the ring. You can turn off the vibrator. You could say, I do not want to be bothered at this time. Or you can choose to read everything, be overly consumed, and be just this nervous mess that's walking down the street. Did I describe you? I certainly described myself, okay? You can be this nervous mess that just got like phone calls coming. You've got text messages to look at. You got your tweets. You got your Facebook status updates. And and the email, of course, email. Yeah, remember that old stuff? Email. Yeah, there was email. There's all of this coming to you. And it's just hitting you constantly, 24/7. I know people that say they go to sleep with these machines. And, you know, if they need to be alerted in the middle of that, what are you going to be alerted to in the middle of the night? I mean, what status update is so important that you're going to mess your sleep up? But it is. It's important. Okay, you can choose to listen to these messages or you can choose not to. And these are the messengers. The same thing with God's message. God talks to each of us. He messages us through the angels, basically messengers, the message that we feel in our hearts, in our souls. Those are legitimate messages and you can cut them out. You can say no to them, you can turn off the switch, or you can listen to them and react to them. And then there's a priority. Which one is real? Which one is, well, think about it. Does it help you? Does it move you forward? And is it something that is destructive, or is it something that is fulfilling, taking you from potential to kinetic? It's just very, very basic science, right? Potential energy is what you have. Kinetic energy is the movement, right? Well, same thing in your life. You have God in your life. Can you make that kinetic? Can it move forward? So with this being said, we, you know, certainly the story of this this guy in the Philippines, he's looking, he's choosing to accept a good message. He's choosing to, well, look at the glass that's half full, right, instead of half empty. Okay, that being said, let's back up a little bit more. What am I going to be doing this weekend? I told you I'm going to be taking a trip, and it has to do with this 100th anniversary, the 100-year journey. Well, what I'm going to be doing starting this weekend, I'm going to be out in Palm Springs, actually, at the St. Garabed Armenian Church. I'm going to be going to each Armenian church within this diocese in the next year and a half until April 24th, 2015, till the 100th anniversary. And at each of these stops, I'm going to be giving a sermon about a clergyman. What? Clergyman? What clergyman? Well, about a clergyman from 1915. Interestingly enough, there is a book that was published in the early 1920s. It is written by a scribe who uses the name Teotic. Not sure what his real name is, but he used this name Teotic, and it's called Golgotha of the Armenian Church. Golgotha, of course, referring to the site where Jesus was crucified. What is the Golgotha of the Armenian Church? Well, it is where the clergy were crucified. And it documents the lives of, or the martyrdom, excuse me, of 1,200 plus Armenian clergymen during the genocide between the years 1915 and 1920. And during those 5 years, it goes through wherever he could. He went and found records of where the priest served. It tells you where he had the opportunity. He knew when they were born, so you had an age. How old was this person? You had an idea of when he was ordained, when he became a priest. And then it goes through some of the stories. And some of these stories are gruesome. Some of these stories replicate and go beyond the crucifixion of Christ. Namely, the mocking, the taunting, putting these clergymen out in the middle of these plazas and hanging them and saying, renounce your God, renounce Christ. And you have to wonder, what? Now, who would do that? Well, it's the human condition that they would, yeah, that's part of genocide, right? It's just as valid as infecting a group of women with HIV/AIDS, knowing that the subsequent generations would pay for it, right? By being also infected and would die. In the same way, you have these clergymen, and their stories, their gruesome stories, would affect generations to come if they were told. And I think that these stories can be effective in a very positive way, because first of all, it makes you think, why? Why did these people do this? I mean, it could have been you're in a remote area in Turkey, right? You've got maybe a few families, and they're coming over to you, and they're saying, okay, we're going to kill you, and we're going to kill these families. You are the priest. You're in charge of this community. Renounce Christ, okay? And we will let you live. We will let these families live. Now, you have a choice. You got to think about this, okay? Is that life important? Well, obviously, it is. Quality of life issues come up. But what's the most important? You've got a few years here on earth or that eternal life. And these priests, over and over again, throughout this book, documented, they say, no, go ahead, take our life. We will not exchange the wealth of this world with the wealth that Christ, that God has in store for us. So first of all, it shows us a deep commitment and understanding of Christianity beyond this life, of Christianity as eternity. But it also gives a very important glimpse of character, of human character, in the face of tragedy, and I'm going to add this word to it, of Christian human character. And very important, okay? Christ was the only one who said that you can defeat evil with love. You can defeat evil with nonviolence. You don't need to pick up a sword, because if you pick up that sword, you just get into that whole cycle of violence. You need to repay evil with love. You need to turn the other cheek. Now, this is wild. It's wild. It doesn't go with the themes of war. It doesn't go with the video games that we play. It doesn't go with the football games we watch. It doesn't go with life. But what Jesus is saying is a higher order. And certainly, when you look at it, you have to ask yourself, first of all, is he for real? Second of all, when you look at it and you see these examples, and this is where my stories are going to be going in this series that I'm going to be doing. At each of these churches, I'm going to take one of these lives, one of these clergymen that really answered that evil with good. One of these clergymen that was martyred for the sake of the gospel. And in looking at that life, finding the parallels and finding the opportunities for us to rise to the occasion in our life. So that's the project that I'm going to be involved in, and that's what I'll be out there in Palm Springs this week, and I believe December I'm going to be out in Costa Mesa. As soon as I get a better understanding of where I'm going to be each month, I think I'll post it, and if you happen to be in the area, I'd love to meet you, love to see you there, and maybe what we can do is put all of these stories together, put this group of sermons together at the end of this journey ourselves, and have something that we can look at and say that, okay, there was a genocide, and then here it is 100 years later. Here's a group of people that are defining that genocide in terms of a response, in terms of love. And of course, that in itself is what we do with In His Shoes. In His Shoes came out of a group of young people that looked at the genocide and said, okay, is it really, do we need somebody else to validate the genocide? It did happen. I mean, what do you need? Do you need Congress to tell you that it happened? It happened. So what are we doing about it now? What are we doing as children of that genocide? Is it so important that we have these $100,000, $200,000 weddings? Is it so important that I can't afford to put food on my family's table but can afford to make a $700, $800 car payment? Is it so important that I have to go out to Las Vegas and show that I'm a big shot? Or is it important that as a child of genocide survivors, I can define what's going on in the world? Namely, be the first responder out in the Philippines. Namely, not forget about Haiti. Namely, talk about genocide in terms of love and compassion to others. So that's what we're going to be doing. That's where we're moving. And that's what is all inspired because of what we do here at The Next Step. This is what it's all about. This is what we do at, In His Shoes. This is the ministry. This is what Christ did. It's what Christ did. Think about it for a moment. All the negativity, right? The Jews were looking for somebody to come and save them. And he said, wait, it's not about chosenness. God has already chosen all of humanity and everyone, whatever your color may be, whatever your background may be, can inherit the kingdom. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what kind of blood you have. You are all children of God. And so all of a sudden, in this great equation that Christ puts us in, what happens? We start living as people. And I seriously believe that I know I've been criticized many times. Well, if we're talking about a world community, then all of a sudden we lose our ethnic boundaries. And in a sense, what happens at that point? What? You have peace? Imagine there are no possessions. Imagine there are no boundaries. There's no countries. There's no religion. Imagine there's no barriers. What do you have then? Peace? Yeah, not bad. Not bad. But I'm going to go one step further, and I'm going to say that I think in that kind of scenario also, you heighten the awareness about yourself, and you become a better person with all of your attributes. You are able to highlight and showcase the qualities of your culture, of your being, of yourself, of your family to others. And so I don't buy that by saying that we are all people of one race, that you lose individuality. I think individuality gets heightened at moments like that because we start looking at one another in a very beautiful way, in a very pure and realistic way. Okay, well, that about does it, okay? I went through quite a bit of stuff today. Let me let Susie talk a little bit so I can catch my breath, and I'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
That last chord, don't you? Just love the way he plays that. Ah, well, thank you, Susie. That was an important announcement, and it's always a good reminder for us. You know, what we do over here is so off the charts. Really, you go to an Armenian church, and I've seen so many of them. I go to these Armenian churches, and I saw it again this morning. You know, there's like there's a fashion show, and they start talking about it being God's work, and you know, come on, we gotta get a little bit more realistic about our faith. We've got to start understanding that our faith can move mountains, not just fashions down an aisle, not just the pilaf from one type of food to the next. It's about eternity. It's about God. And really what we're doing here at Epostle is really stripping away some of the excesses that have been put on our lives and really looking at what is the essential of faith. This is an interesting experiment in many ways because we are now, we're sixth year in broadcasting. Every week we've been coming out and more people come up. Just yesterday I ran into some guy who came up and he said, you know, I've been listening to you for how many years? And this is somebody out of the blue. Just by chance we had run into each other. And he started quoting, like, you know, things from In His Shoes and Epostle, even made a comment about the piano player, how much he enjoys that we have to take him out of the studio. It's so cramped, and bringing in the grand piano and then taking it out, which makes me feel good. At least people are listening to some of the fun we have over here, too. But more importantly, people are listening. And this is so, so important. You can't believe it. Right now, we are facing major issues of genocide happening right now in our streets with our children. The other day, I was with a group of clergymen, and we were talking about the Armenian issues of 2015, 100th anniversary. And I asked them straight out. I said, how many of you in this small gathering, how many of you have buried young kids who have died of suicide, who have died because of drugs, because of alcoholism, because of their things? Aren't we sick and tired of it? Isn't this a genocide in itself? Isn't this a targeted genocide of basically losing the people without the bloodshed, but basically losing the people to materialism, losing the people to the false gods that are all around us? And you look around and you see other communities and the way that they are attached to faith. In particular, I've shared with you this with Next Step listeners. I'm so impressed by, look at the Roman Catholic community, look at the African American community, and their use of religion as strength. Not as a sign of weakness, but as a sign of strength. And I think we have that. We just haven't tapped into it in a proper way. That's what Armadoxy is about. That's what we do here on The Next Step. So if you want to become part of this mission, part of this expansion, part of what we do over here, or if you just appreciate getting this podcast delivered to you every week, hey, make a donation, become part of the family of Epostle. And Susie gave you all the ways. Get on our website, epostle.net, hit the donate button. Just drop us a line, feedback@epostle.net. We're looking for some big donations too, right? Okay, we need to, did you like the new system today? Is my voice coming out okay? Well, those things are made possible from big donations that transfer into little things that we have fun with too. We just love, we're technology junkies over here. Okay, I am going to be back next week. Until then, I want to invite you to get on our website, Epostle, really easy to remember. That's Apostle with an E for electronic, expanding universe. This is Armenian Orthodoxy. Conjugated, it becomes Armadoxy. Very easy ways to remember these things. We're going to have links on today's show notes where you can tap into all of our other stuff. We've got a lot of things going on in the Dotev Outreach, in Inside the Pomegranate, Compass, The Next Step in Issues. Please check us out on Facebook as well. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, Vahir, our webman, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed and been blessed by this edition of The Next Step with Father Voskin. We invite you to join us every week for our regular broadcast. This, as well as all other episodes of The Next Step, are available for streaming and download at epostle.net. In addition, you can stream, download, or subscribe at Apple's iTunes Store, Blueberry, and Stitcher Radio, or try our smartphone app. New episodes are available globally every Thursday. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. We invite you to point your web browser to epostle.net, where you can enter your email address to have The Next Step delivered directly to your inbox. For the production crew and all the members of In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking The Next Step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with The Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, The Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off Balan Top Minutes.